So we see that the choices we make, what's more important, because we're all going to make bad choices, is what's the next choice after a bad one. I think that's the key to our Christian walk. It's because nobody is going to make the right choice every time. What we have to do is when we make a bad choice, to recognize it and then make a good choice to fix it as quickly as possible. Too often we don't. Too often we rationalize or justify the choice that we've made, and that just leads to more bad choices. Sometimes the sin isn't as important as how we deal with it or how we react to it. What our choices are after the fact. Colossians talks about the old self and the new self. And I think this is where we need to look sometimes and see where we are in our walk of faith. Colossians chapter 3, starting in verse 5. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is on account of these things that the wrath of God will come. And in them you also once walked while you were living in them. But now you also put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices, and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. A renewal in which there is no distinction between Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave and free man, but Christ is all and in all. And so, as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. And beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. And let the peace of Christ rule in your heart, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you, with all wisdom, teaching, and admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. You see the choices we're confronted with? He puts a column of bad choices over here. And he said, that's the type of person you was before. These are the type of choices you made and how you chose to live your life. But now you're a Christian, you can't do that stuff anymore. You put those aside. But here are some things you need to substitute in their place. Because that's the worst thing for a new Christian. You know, new Christians, we tell them, well, you got to stop doing that. You can't hang around with this person. You can't do this. You can't do that. Well, what are they going to do to fill the void? There's got to be people and activities and actions and things to do that fill that void that we've helped them put in their lives. That's critical, because if that void isn't filled, it's just going to get filled back up with stuff they know. It's the same way with all of us. And so now he gives a column of good choices. And the way he talks about it is the stuff, it's like putting clothes on. Put on a heart of compassion. Put it on. Wear it. And that's what he's telling them. You have to put this new stuff, these new attitudes, this new way of thinking, these new behaviors, this new lifestyle, you need to wear it. You need to put it on to replace what we've gotten you to take off. Old self or new self. So we see from all these examples that many times the most important choices are those that we make after we mess up. It's not so bad that we make a bad choice now and then, because we're all going to do it. And I'm using the word bad choices, it's sin. Anytime we sin, it's a bad choice. We're all going to do it. The key is, what do we do next? What are we going to do about it? So what does all this mean to me? I can't get much out of a sermon or a Bible class unless I can make a personal application. Okay, all this is interesting and it's good and I know it's true, but what does it mean to me personally? Each day, consciously or unconsciously, we decide a lot of stuff. How will I look? Now I know, you know, Ron White says you can't fix stupid. And you can't fix ugly. But you can make it better. You know, I think Sarah Palin said you can't put lipstick on a pig. Well, you can. You know, we can all look better. Now, I'm not saying looks are that important, but we decide each day what we're going to look like, don't we? We decide whether we're going to look sloppy or unkempt or not caring, or whether we're going to look presentable and decent. That's just a decision we make. Sometimes it's more conscious than others. But we do make a decision each day about how I'm going to look today. How will I talk? Now, I know words slip out of our mouth sometimes, but we do make a decision about what kind of language we're going to use. That can be trained, and it should be trained. But if we slip into these patterns of using inappropriate language or talking derogatorily towards people, you know, sometimes the tone of my voice comes across like I'm mad. And I don't really think I am, but the tone of voice tells other people that I'm mad. So we decide how we're going to talk and how we're going to present ourselves to other people. What kind of attitude will I carry? In other words, where is my heart going to be today? We have a choice about that, don't we? Sometimes we just carry over a bad attitude from day to day. Or something will happen to trigger something in us, and it flips that negative switch on, and we just run with it. But we can choose to develop a better attitude about life. What will I do with each day? You know, some of y'all, your days are kind of controlled. I mean, you got an employer, and you got to go to work, and you got to be there at a certain time. You got to do certain stuff a certain way. And Christians should be the best employees because it says we're working for God. I'm retired, so I have a lot more decisions making about my time. You know, each of us has different choices that we have to make, but we do decide whether we do it consciously or unconsciously about what we're going to do with each day. We all chose to be here this morning and give this part of today to God. And that's a good thing. But what about the rest of our days? What about the rest of our weeks? What are we doing with our time? Who will I choose as friends? That's extremely important for kids, but it's also extremely important for us as adults. Who we surround ourselves with in our daily lives. Because whether we think it or not, the people we spend time with influence us. And we fool ourselves sometimes and say, well, I really like this person. I know they do this and that and the other, and I can handle that. But if we associate with the wrong people, they can drag us down. What will I do for entertainment and relaxation? Will I have sex before marriage and after marriage? Will I cheat on my spouse? These are decisions that we make. And sometimes I know people say they just slip into this certain type of behavior. Well, you don't slip into it. You make a choice that leads you to another choice that goes to another choice, and finally you look around and say, how did I get here? Will I cheat in life if I feel it necessary? You know, that's an accepted pattern of behavior in today's business world and society in general. If it can advance an agenda or get me ahead or make things better for me and my family, I don't have a problem lying or cheating about it. But we make a choice whether we're going to do that or not. What about as far as spiritual matters? Go back to Joshua chapter 24, and he lays it out about as clearly as anywhere else in Scripture. Joshua chapter 24, verses 14 and 15. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth. And put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. It sounds pretty straightforward and simple. But that's a choice that's before all of us today. Many of us have a religion that we grew up in, that was the religion of our parents and grandparents and maybe friends. And we had to make a choice when we became confronted with the truth of the gospel, whether we were going to abandon that inherited religion or whether we were going to rationalize why we can't obey the gospel and live a different faith. Matthew 10. And sometimes these choices are very difficult. Matthew 10:34-39. Do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies will be the members of his household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who has found his life shall lose it, and he who has lost his life for my sake shall find it. Joshua said, you can follow the religion and faith of your fathers. That's not what I'm going to do. And we have this, Jesus said the same thing right here. We can't put anything, even our families, ahead of what the truth of the gospel says in our obedience to God. Contemporary religion. There's a lot of that out there today. A lot of churches have contemporary services because they want to stay up with the times. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 12. There is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. And then chapter 30, verse 12 in Proverbs. There is a kind who is pure in his own eyes, yet is not washed from his filthiness. Society can tell us this is okay. It's okay to worship God this way. It's okay to live this way. And he's going to be fine with it. Contemporary religion changes with societal trends. And that's what Joshua said to his people. You can follow the religion of the Amorites, the land in whom you're living. But as for me and my house, I will serve the Lord. So we can choose. We can choose to follow inherited religion. We can choose to follow contemporary religion. Or we can follow true religion. You know, it's hard to fathom, but in today's world, these verses will get people riled up to where people will say, if you believe these verses, you're some kind of bigot or fanatic. But John 14:6 says, Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Does most of the world believe that today? I don't think so. And there are a lot of people who call themselves Christians that don't believe that today. Acts chapter 4, verse 12. There is no salvation. And there is salvation in no one else. For there is no other name under heaven that has been given among men by which we must be saved. That's exclusive. That excludes every other religion that's not based on the scriptures and the teachings and the life, death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And we choose whether we're going to follow that religion or not, don't we? God's worship or our worship? You know, Cain started the will worship idea, worshiping God the way he wanted to, and he paid a price for it. It's no different today. We can worship God the way we want, or we can search the scriptures and try to worship God the way he tells us. And we choose individually and as congregations what we're going to do about that, don't we? It's all choices. John chapter 4, go back there, verses 23 and 24. But an hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and truth. For such people the Father seeks to be his worshipers. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. And then, what is truth? Jesus answers that. John 17:17, sanctify them in the truth. Thy word is truth. So, as far as spiritual matters go, we choose how we're going to handle that. The problem is today is the biggest the largest and fastest growing segment of the American population is the unchurched, those who have made a decision not to worship God in any way. Those are people that, you know, may be really hard to reach because they have no interest whatsoever. The unchurched is the fastest growing segment of our society. They have chosen no religion. They're not interested in inherited religion, contemporary religion, true religion, nothing. You know, you drive out of a lot of neighborhoods on Sunday morning, most people are packing their boats and their SUVs or mowing their grass. They've made a choice. So we decide, we choose. But look at some of the choices that's set before us. Matthew chapter 11. Jesus says, starting in verse 27, "All things have been handed over to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father, nor does anyone know the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son wills to reveal him. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my load is light." So we have a choice. He put that choice before us. We can either come or not. And in John, he says it in another way. John chapter 8, verses 31 and 32. "Jesus therefore was saying to those Jews who have believed him, 'If you abide in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.'" So he says abide. That means live. Live in my word. So he gives us a choice in Matthew, come, follow. And in John, abide. Live in my word. And then in Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, "If then you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on earth." So set your mind. That means control what you're thinking about. Decide, choose to dwell on things that are spiritual and based on my words. And then Matthew really challenges us. These verses in Matthew. Matthew 6:33, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." That's a challenge even for the strongest Christian, is to keep seeking him first. There's so many other things that can creep into our lives that seem so important at the moment. And for that moment, we relegate Jesus down a little bit lower on that rung. He says, seek first. That means always, for all time, every day, every hour. That is hard to do. But that's what we're told. As we mature in the faith, our choices can and should become almost habitual and easier. But they're still choices. From time to time, we need to examine our choices. From the larger ones to the basic fundamental ones, just to make sure we're still making choices that are keeping us in the right relationship with God. Selfishness and pride can cloud our perception. And Satan can subtly convince us over time that we're okay with God, when in fact, some small choices here and there can lead to bigger choices that are drawing us away from him and his church. So how do we make sure we're making the right choices? Choose to put God first in all things. That's number one. Decide that the Bible is the authority and not what I want. I'm telling you, I think we're all guilty of that. Even though we say that we're using the Bible as our scriptural authority, you can pick and choose verses to justify anything you want to do. We have to do it and search the scriptures with an honest heart, with the idea of adjusting our lives to what it says, not adjusting what it says to what we want to do. Two, develop closer Christian relationships. I think that's very important. We can't function in a vacuum. Satan will eat us up. And that's why Jesus established the church. That's the purpose of it. It's a support system. Pray regularly, attend faithfully, and maintain a positive faith and trust in God. You know, those are five, you know, they're easy to say. They're not always easy to do. But I think choices are very difficult sometimes. I want to end with a poem written by a lady named Jenny Crolius. I don't know who she is or where I got this poem. I've just had it for years and years and years. And it's called The Beginning of Forever. And she's lamenting about the choices she made and the consequences that it's bringing her. And so I'll read this, and I want y'all to think about what she's saying and then reflect on whether your choices are leading you the same direction hers did. I woke up one night from the heat in my room. I felt an unexplainable deep sense of gloom. Slowly my eyes opened up to see something strange had happened to me. No longer was I lying safely in bed, but was standing among many I knew to be dead. I recognized friends and neighbors around, and there was an old woman in a heap on the ground. I felt my fear begin to rise as I looked into a pair of sad eyes. The eyes belonged to a man in white. His face was shining with an excellent light. I could see the long scar on his side from the knife, and in his scarred hands was the book titled Life. As he turned the page, I approached his throne, and I tried to recall the truth I'd once known. I was taught as a child to love God and obey, but once on my own, I wandered away. The Lord's heart broke as he brushed a tear with his hand, and he said to me simply, I don't understand. Once you loved my word and kept my laws, now you're in the world's hands. What's the cause? I cried aloud and tried to pray, but my Savior's hand motioned me away. I knew what he'd say, and I cringed at the thought, but still the words came, I know you not. I begged for a chance my story to tell before the great judge sentenced me to hell. I would have attended thy worship more if only the preacher hadn't been such a bore. The singing was almost always off key, and the public prayers did nothing for me. Why, once I shook a visitor's hand, introduced myself, and acted quite grand. But one brother who had observed the scene had nothing to say of my being so keen. So you see, Lord, right then I made up my mind on all these hypocrites I'd not waste my time. But all along I've loved you in my heart, and after all, that's the important part. When I'd finished my speech, the Lord hung his head, and I could tell he hadn't liked what I said. With tears in his eyes, he looked up at me and said, I never asked much of thee. I offered my life on Calvary's hill. I died for you as was my God's will. If you had loved me like you say, you would have been faithful, a small price to pay. But you chose to walk in the way that's wide. You straddled the fence, never choosing a side. Now you beg for mercy, yet it's too late. You'll never pass through the beautiful gate. I could see on his face that his heart broke for me, and I opened my mouth for one last feeble plea. He wouldn't listen. He had closed his ears. I knew now how worthless were my wasted years. I had no choice but to part from my Lord, and I turned to his left without one more word. I stood amidst many I'd known on this earth who all now felt their great lack of worth. The wailing and crying was impossible to bear. The darkness was thick and hot with the air. We walked down a path that was very wide, me and all the others who in sin had died. I looked over my shoulder when we were almost there, and I saw the great Lord rise into the air. He took with him the few who faithful had been, and I cried to know I'd never see him again. My body was different, and yet I felt pain. I heard myself scream again and again. At last we were in the devil's den, the place of torment, our eternity to spend. I thought of my life and the things I'd done. I relived in my mind each sin one by one. The gift of life that once had been mine, I trampled underfoot time after time. I sat among those whom on earth I would flee. I'd be with them forever. What cruel irony. As I wandered the fiery streets of hell, I knew the truth only too well. I couldn't blame my brothers in the Lord, for they often tried to teach me the word. It wasn't the fault of my family. In fact, the entire blame lay all on me. Let me try again, I heard myself shout. I searched and searched, but there was no way out. As I saw pain and fear in my companion's eyes, the panic within me started to rise. I had to get out. I wanted to be free. I started to run. I tried to flee. There was no escape, and then suddenly Satan himself stood looking at me. I offered an excuse on my behalf, but he cared not to hear it and started to laugh. I hated him so and hated myself as he added my soul to his victory shelf. My mind was weary from my futile endeavor. crying, I sat down, the beginning of forever. If you need to respond in any way, come forward as we stand and sing.